The views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the program host, guests, and participants, and not necessarily those of KKRN Community Radio and Acorn Community Enterprises or the underwriters of this station. Welcome to KKRN Radio and Off the Shelf with Mary. I'm your host, Dr. Mary Mitchell. I'll be sharing some of my favorite old and new nonfiction books about philosophy, spiritual psychology, science, and metaphysics that might offer just the knowledge you've been looking for to enhance your life. Today, I'll be highlighting two of my favorite books on the art of public speaking. The first is Talk Like TED, T-E-D, Public Speaking Secrets of the World's Top Minds by Carmine Gallo, published in 2014. The second book is Simply Speaking, How to Communicate Your Ideas with Style, Substance, and Clarity by Peggy Noonan, published in 1998. So who is Carmine Gallo? He's a communication coach for the world's most admired people. A former anchor and correspondent for CNN and CBS, Gallo's a popular keynote speaker who's worked with executives in the most respected corporations. And he's the author of the best-selling book, The Presentation Secrets of Steve Jobs. I bet that's fascinating. Gallo begins this book, Talk Like TED, by sharing his beliefs that ideas are the true currency of the 21st century. So in order to succeed, you must be able to sell your ideas and yourself persuasively. That ability is the single greatest skill to help anyone accomplish their dreams. This book is focused on the best TED Talks, which have redefined the elements of a successful presentation and are now the gold standard for public speaking. TED stands for Technology, Entertainment, and Design, which brings together the world's leading innovators and thinkers. When TED Talks began in 2006, one of the most popular talks was by motivational guru Tony Robbins, and also Facebook COO Sheryl Sandberg, who wrote a bestseller after her TED Talk went viral on the subject of women in the workplace. Oprah Winfrey once put it more succinctly, TED is where brilliant people go to hear other brilliant people share their ideas. Yes, TED Talks offer new approaches to solving long-standing problems, inspiring stories, and intriguing ways of delivering information. Mr. Gallo read hundreds of TED Talks, and he interviewed the most popular TED presenters, as well as top researchers in the fields of psychology, communications, and neuroscience. He was looking for their cutting-edge insights that have revealed 9 secrets for a successful TED presentation. The book is organized in 3 parts: emotional, novel, and memorable. In each part are 3 secrets for an inspiring presentation for a total of 9. Part 1, emotional. The first secret is unleashing the master within, which is our passion. He states that a talk must touch the heart of the listener. A speaker's passion about their subject is the key. It helps listeners get emotionally attached to the topic. You know, we wonder why, but science actually shows that passion is literally contagious. We cannot inspire others unless we're inspired ourselves. A speaker stands a much greater chance of persuading and inspiring listeners if they're enthusiastic, passionate, and have a meaningful connection to the topic. When Gallo interviewed the founder of Starbucks, Howard Schultz, he asked what he was passionate about. Schultz said, well, he wasn't passionate about coffee as much as he was passionate about building a third place between work and home, a place where employees could be treated with respect and offer exceptional customer service. Coffee is their product, but Starbucks was built on his vision of exceptional customer service. When Gallo interviewed the head of a California Association of Strawberry Growers, he had another question to ask. Replying to "What are you passionate about?" the man said he was passionate about promoting California strawberries, of course. But when Gallo asked what made his heart sing, he replied it was the American dream. Since his parents were immigrants who worked in the fields and eventually they were able to buy land and grow their business. So it's a passion that makes our hearts sing, and it's something that's intensely meaningful, part of our identity. It influences our daily activities and what we do professionally, and it will truly, in a speech, inspire the audience. Secret number two is mastering the art of storytelling. Brian Stevenson is a widely acclaimed public interest lawyer who has dedicated his career to helping the poor, the incarcerated, and the condemned. He founded a human rights organization called the Equal Justice Initiative. You know, Stevenson earned the longest standing ovation in TED history. That must have been amazing. When Gallo analyzed his talk, he saw that 65% of his presentation was telling stories. Stories stimulated and engaged the listener's brains and helped the speaker connect with the audience. And it's more likely the audience will agree with the speaker's point of view. Stevenson shared the day he briefly met an older black janitor on the way to court where he was defending a condemned client. The janitor was pacing back and forth in the hallway, and he had a very worried look on his face. And in the courtroom, he came in and sat behind Stevenson. At the break, a deputy sheriff ran over to the janitor and said, "What are you doing here?" The janitor looked at the deputy and at Stevenson and said he came to the courtroom to tell Stevenson, "Always keep your eyes on the prize. Hold on." Stevenson concluded his talk by saying that we cannot be fully evolved human beings until we care about human rights and basic dignity. Our visions must be married with humanity, compassion, and justice. And more than anything, for those who shared his belief, he said, "I've simply come to tell you to keep your eyes on the prize. Hold on." In breaking down the 4,057 words in Stevenson's presentation, Gallo matched each sentence or paragraph with one of Aristotle's three components of communication theory. Ethos, which is our credibility. Logos is our emotional attachment. And pathos, our reasoning or logic. So if a sentence or paragraph in Stevenson's presentation was about his prison work, Gallo placed that sentence or paragraph in the ethos category, his credibility. The result was that the ethos credibility made only 10% of the content of his speech. Logos, or emotional attachment, was 25%. And pathos, reasoning or logic, was 65%. It was voted one of the most persuasive TED Talks. It influenced listeners by appealing to reason with the added emotional impact of stories. The conclusion is that we cannot persuade others by using logic alone. Our brains are more engaged when we hear stories. So there are three simple and effective types of stories. Personal stories related to the theme of the talk, and they take listeners on a journey. Next are stories about people who have learned a lesson that the audience can relate to. And then there are stories about brand success, like discovering how one spaghetti sauce on the grocery shelf sells far more than any other. The third secret is having a conversation, which requires practicing relentlessly so we know the talk so well that we can deliver it as comfortably as talking with a close friend. It requires authenticity, which can be challenging in front of a large audience. And it requires hours of work, digging deeper than we ever have, choosing the right words that best represent the way we feel about a topic, and then delivering those words for maximum impact, and making sure that our nonverbal communication, our gestures, and our body language are consistent with the message. The pace of how we speak is also important. Studies show that 150 to 160 words a minute is the ideal rate of speech. It seems to be the rate where most listeners comfortably hear, absorb, and recall information. I'm going to have to take some time this week and see how many words a minute I'm speaking on this on this program. Make sure I'm not going too fast or too slow. But as Gallo researched dozens of TED Talks, he counted how many words were in a typical 18-minute talk. It ranged from 2,700 to 4,000. So it depends on your rate of delivery and if it sounds natural. In the novel section of the book, secret number four is, teach me something new. And there was a TED Talk by a gentleman named Edi Rama, a painter who once found himself the mayor of the capital of Albania for about a decade. The city was once considered one of the most corrupt cities in the world. It's full of garbage, mud, derelict buildings, and lots of gray. For him, it was depressing and demoralizing, but when he became mayor, he implemented a series of reforms that included demolishing old buildings and painting the outside of other buildings, city buildings, in bright colors. He used to be a painter. And today, parts of this city, it's 650,000 people, it resembles a Peter Mondrian painting with blues, yellows, and pinks. And it just shattered the 45 years of gray from those days when the city was under communist dictatorship. The gray gave way to color, and then crime dropped. New stores opened. Parks sprang up. People felt more pride in their city. And the residents claimed that since it was so beautiful, they were finally safe. Secret number five is to deliver a jaw-dropping moment, something shocking or impressive. Bill Gates mastered this in his TED Talk. He was talking about how many children are saved these days due to better medicines and vaccines. But yet millions of people die from malaria each year, which is created carried by mosquitoes. He actually brought a jar of mosquitoes onto the stage, and he started to open the jar, and he said, "Oh, we'll just let them roam around the room since there's no reason why only poor people should be infected." But then he said, "No, I was just joking. These are malaria-free mosquitoes." But he had made his point and no one would forget it. So secret number six is to lighten up with some humor and novelty. And I think Bill Gates did a good job of that. Part three, the talk must be memorable, which means it's presented in a way that the listener will never forget it. Secret seven is to stick to the 18-minute rule. It's an ideal time for a presentation because if we give the listener too much information, they feel overloaded. And then at the same time, it requires the speaker to stick to the 18-minute rule. Great discipline. Secret eight is to paint a mental picture of your story using multi-sensory experiences such as slides or other things. And secret number nine is to stay in your lane, to be authentic, open, transparent, because most people can spot a phony. If you try to be something you're not or someone you're not, you will not gain the trust of the audience. So thank you, Carmine Gallo, for this invaluable analysis of TED Talks. KKRN is a community radio station supported by listeners and a team of volunteers who keep everything organized and running well. You're invited to support this amazing group by sending a donation to KKRN, P.O. Box 188, Round Mountain, California, 96805, or look for the donate button on the website. We also love donations of cars, trucks, boats, or motorcycles through careasy.org. And if you have any questions, be sure to give us a call, 1-855-500-7433. The next book is Simply Speaking by Peggy Noonan. Peggy is a weekly columnist for the Wall Street Journal and a contributor to NBC News and ABC News. And she was a primary speech writer and assistant to President Ronald Reagan from 1984 to 1986. Five of her books have been New York Times bestsellers. But this book is one of advice and anecdotes about what works and what doesn't when you're communicating using only words in the air. As more in their use of media technologies, a premium has been put on this oldest form of communication. The ability to give a speech, to stand in front of others and say what you think. You know, at business conferences, people are increasingly invited to speak about their industry's plan, the realities of how they operate, or what government is doing or not doing in their field. Today, most audiences are even larger now that we have online services such as Zoom. So there's an expectation of how a good talk is approached and presented. People are more media savvy today, and yet there are speakers that still have trouble saying things that are truly interesting. Hopefully that's not me. Instead, there's a tendency to say what's expected. Now you know the rest of that story. But in an 18 to 20 minute speech, it is more formal and more focused. So once we commit to giving a speech, stage fright is only half the challenge. The other half is, now I have to write it. Noonan believes there are things in every area of interest that can be pointed out and emphasized, pitfalls that can be highlighted and avoided. And that's what this book is about. Her immediate advice is, the most moving thing in a speech is its logic. We've heard that before about 10 minutes ago. You know, it's not flowery words or allusions. It's not sentimental things or waxing poetic. It's the logic behind your case. A good case, well argued and well said, is inherently moving, and it shows respect for the intelligence of the listeners. There's an implicit compliment in it. It shows that you're a serious person and understand that you're talking to serious people. So to begin with, there are three things to keep in mind. First, no speech should last more than 20 minutes. Aha, Ted at 18. Why, she writes, well, because Ronald Reagan said so. 20 minutes is more than enough time to say the biggest, most important thing in the world. And a 20-minute speech is about 10 typed pages, double-spaced. Second, write out the text. You know, if you've ever gone blank in the middle of a thought or forgot what you were going to say, please don't let it happen in public. And if you can read from a card, that's fine if you're a pro. And if you've locked in your message, but most of us aren't pros, so we have to fall back on what we wrote. It's valuable to be able to glance at the words right in front of us. Third is humor. It's essential. Every speech needs it. If it's early in the speech, it gives the speaker a quick victory of laughter, and it helps the audience relax. It's the speaker's way of saying, this will not be painful. Humor is allowed here. Humor is gracious, and it shows respect. It shows the audience you think enough of them to want to entertain them. If you haven't written a speech before, start with trying to figure out what you want to say on a specific topic. We often have a lot of scattered thoughts and more than a few options, ideas, and insights, but we have to winnow it down. The 20-minute limit is liberating because we have to keep it to that essential. Stick to one subject and why you support it, and then illustrate the points that pertain to it. If you tell a story, be sure it's self-contained with a beginning, a middle, and an end that ties back to the beginning. It helps the audience track your story in pictures. One of the sturdiest cliches in all communication is, tell them what you're going to tell them. Tell them, then tell them what you told them. It helps focus the audience. It yanks them back from what the talk is all about, or if they started to daydream, and it keeps the speaker focused as well. Peggy shares a memory about one famous speech writer. His name was Jamie Humes, and he wrote for 7 presidents, and he was a gifted impersonator of Winston Churchill. Humes wrote a book about speech writing called The Sir Winston Method, published in 1991. Now, as soon as I read that, I stopped doing anything, and I Googled Abe Books in Portland, which is the best source for out-of-print books, and I found an original Humes book for sale. And I noticed the tagline, The Sir Winston Method, 5 Secrets of Speaking the Language of Leadership. Well, I couldn't pass that up, but there's still several available, so you might want to check it out at Abe Books. Humes wrote that the moment you decide to write a speech, real preparation begins the moment you start caring. do whatever research is needed and make notes on what you want to say, because only when you've fine-tuned it are you really ready to speak it to an audience. And an audience can be convinced of what you're saying only when they see that you care about what you're talking about. If you don't care about what you're talking about, you've chosen the wrong subject. If it was an assigned topic, one idea is to ask your friends or colleagues, why do you see this topic as interesting? And then add some funny anecdotes to it. One suggestion Peggy offers is that speakers pay attention and be able to say the sentences that they write. Keep them sayable. I think that's so important. Use dashes as a guide. That's what Churchill did. On when to take a breath or when to break the rhythm or to emphasize a point. Sentences must also be short and sayable, not only for you, but for the listener. They're trying to absorb what you're saying, and if it's too dense, they won't be able to follow. Another thing is to remember that speeches are words in the air. The audience doesn't have a printed copy to look at in order to clear up any confusion. So your words must be heard and comprehended the first time out of your mouth. Also, a lot of words sound alike, such as saber and savior. An audience sitting 20 yards away may be hearing that the subject of your talk had a savior, not a saber. That's why it helps to read your talk out loud to friends or family, who will often gladly tell you when they're confused. Peggy shares many of her experiences on the importance of clarity in speech. At one point, she was writing a speech for then Vice President Bush, who wanted to emphasize the value and importance of personally giving our time to help others, and it is one answer to some of our nation's ills. She thought about it for a few days, and she concluded what he really wanted to say was something like muscular altruism. So she put it in his speech. And the next day, she was asked to kill muscular altruism. And she said, well, why? He said, because it sounds like a disease. And they both had a good laugh. And she writes that it's okay if we're in the middle of a talk going one way and we remember a story or a memory in our personal life that might be of interest to the listeners. The story may be old to us, but it's new to them. To introduce a personal story, she says this. This is a little off the point, but I want to throw it in on the chance it'll be helpful to someone. And, you know, actually, people like short digressions, which are kind of like short stops on a long drive. In giving a speech, it's important to be ourselves. Sometimes we may be unconsciously imitating people we see on TV, but try not to. Be yourself because you are the only you there is. If you have a particular non-distracting habit when you speak, I mean truly non-distracting, like a tendency to nod your head when you make a certain point, then use it. It's authentic, and being authentic in the age of mass media is a real achievement. And now a distracting habit is something unusual or unpleasant, and it starts to bug the audience, who may be thinking, why does he keep scratching his head or rubbing his nose or tugging at his shirt? It's interesting to think about how people might have behaved before we learned to read body language. They must have looked more like they really felt. Yet in this age, when it's so up and close and personal, especially on Zoom, body language can make our presentations less animated and colorful. She notices that when a speaker is really smoothed out now, it's almost like visiting a patient in a hospital who's on heavy medication. I think it's an interesting observation. Toward the end of the book, she addresses applause. That's that physical demonstration telling us that the audience listened, thought about it, and agreed. She cautioned us to never wait for applause. And never end a sentence that you think deserves applause or will get applause. Because when the waiting begins, if the applause doesn't begin, if they don't start to clap, the silence that follows will be heard by everyone. Because it says, sorry, you didn't win us over. It's much better to assume that any applause is an unexpected gift. Let the audience do what they're going to do. If they clap in the middle of a talk, pause so that when you resume your talk, they can hear you. It's an odd thing about applause. We like it, but it can be difficult to respond to. The only thing to do is nod, yes, obviously, and keep doing your job. If applause is sustained, simply say, thank you. In summing up, Peggy advises, first, be not afraid. Second, think logically about the case you're making and make it. Third, your style shouldn't be taller than you are. Don't imitate the high oratory of past presidents or generals. Say it the way you'd say it if you were speaking with respected friends. Fourth, the most moving thing in a speech is always the logic, the case you're making, what you believe in and support. You know, don't try to move people by manipulating them with phony emotionalism or poetry. And fifth, use humor when you can because it makes people laugh. Six, give your speech to friends before you give it to others to discover problems such as unpronounceable words, undeliverable sentences, and unpersuasive arguments. And seven, use your own gestures. Respect your own quirks. Be you, because they haven't seen the real you yet. You know, I hope you've enjoyed hearing about the secrets to public speaking from both Carmine Gallo and TED Talks and Peggy Newman. Use their wisdom for good in your life and the lives of everyone you love. And for those you don't love, heck, use it for their good anyway. It's another small step in bringing peace to the world. I have a little extra time, so you'll get to hear a little extra of my favorite music for this show. It's from an acoustical guitar CD by the Lemming Shepherds called Symphony for the Senses. And it even comes with a full-color booklet on their adventures. So until next week, dear one, may peace be with you.